Hey everyone, this is Space Cafe Podcast, and I am Marcus. As always, we love to surprise you and we spare no effort to deliver what you expect. In this episode, we bring you arguably one of the most fascinating stories the space industry can deliver. The story of a group of young people who one day set their minds on going to the moon. Without experience, without much economic resources, but with endless passion. This episode is an ode to the joy of trying things out, however great the risks involved. And to top it off, my guest today was part of this unique story as Chief Business Officer. Today, he's the CEO of Spacewatch Global, one of the fastest growing news portals in the space industry. Ladies and gentlemen, join me in welcoming Torsten Kreening, former part-time scientist and passionate fighter and advocate for an independent voice of the space industry.
Let's rock it. Yep.
Yeah, let's rock it. Did you just say let's rock it or let's rock it?
Let's rock it.
Yes, let's rock it. Good idea. Welcome, Torsten. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Finally. Thank you.
Torsten, let's jump right into the fact of the matter. When we met, and that was a couple of years ago, you were in the middle of a pretty fascinating ride that could have brought you into the spotlight of everything when it comes to space travel, because you and a couple of your friends wanted to go to the moon, literally, not in person, but with a remote controlled rover. So what was this mission all about?
Absolutely. And I don't want to take any credits for this project, as I was just at that stage a hired gun or to help them out and then become part of the team. But they started the journey, I think it's now 13 years ago, with the Google Lunar X Prize, one of the X Prize from the X Prize Foundation. And that was in the continuity of the first XPRIZE, which was the suborbital flight XPRIZE, where I think Virgin Galactic and I think that was the Ansari XPRIZE, yeah, where Virgin Galactic and others got some funding to start their journey. And this XPRIZE was about going to the moon as a private company, driving 500 meter with your vehicle, and sending an, I think, few minutes HD video back to Earth. So, and for that, there was an award of, I think, $10 million connected to that. And yeah, that was a story that excited the founding team of part-time scientists, because they needed a name.
I still like that brand name. That was the perfect brand name, part-time scientists. Isn't that beautiful?
It was a perfect brand name for something you do as a hobby. It has a charm. But when you look after in professional investors and getting credits from the community, then it's on the edge.
Yeah.
It still absolutely sounds cool. I mean, the other cool slogan the company had or the team had was, "Hell yeah, it's rocket science." I mean, how cool is that? And the T-shirts, the stickers are still around and people are showing them with pride. And it's cool. It's something very cool that happened. Because, I mean, coming back to the XPRIZE was inspired 35 teams from around the world to go for this goal.
It sounds like, and please do correct me, it sounds like a barbecue project where a couple of guys got together and had a crazy idea. And the later the evening got, the more they were convinced that this was a good idea to apply. Was it something like this?
again, I just can repeat the stories from what I've been told because I haven't been there, but you have been spot on. It was a barbecue that the founder, Robert Boehmer, made for his friends, and then they started discussing the ideas or the idea of just doing it. And Robert got some money from, I think, a car accident at that point of time, and put in the money for the competition because you have to enter with a fee. And so they started and started with the first rover development, first lander development with a very small team. I mean, they've been, I think, beginning of their 20s at that point of time.
Fascinating. And, so I what
mean,
was your...
But that's when it all starts. I mean, when you have nerds that's starting an idea. And I mean, when I came in, I was the eldest guy in town. What they needed was then also some guidance to get it to the next level. I mean, they were all fascinating individuals with great backgrounds and great capacities, but none of them has done anything in space.
Has gone to the moon before.
Yeah, not even that. I mean, if you build your CubeSat, if you've been in at DLR, you at least been connected to the space or environment, but none of them had a proper background on that.
Yes.
And I think that was one of the beauties of this team, but one of the hard challenges as well. I mean, you can buy knowledge at one point of time from the market and competency, no doubt. And at that point of time, the market was absolute open for this idea. And at every event we went with our rover at that point of time, then we had Audi already on board as a partner. So the rover was called in the Audi Lunar Quadro. and I mean, that was...
But it sounds like a legit project. I mean, like, that wasn't just a young boy's nerd project. It turned out to be something real.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I would say from what I received from the discussion and from the history, they made their way and they have done it part-time next to their job, mainly, and then started to getting some donations, some prize money from the Google Lunar X Prize for various milestones. So to even found the first real company behind it. And then again, I mean, just being brave, going out and knocking on big boys' doors. And that was a principle as well. And I mean, think back 10 years ago, if somebody knocks on your door and say, hey, we want to fly to the moon. We are a few guys or young guys from the boonies of East Berlin. With no experience. I mean, that is a bold move. To talk to these crazy guys. I mean, usually that worked quite well because everybody said, oh, wow, that's interesting. Tell me more about it. And when they saw the fire in their eyes or in our eyes and listened to the story, people just got fascinated by the sheer idea of
the boldness
of this bold move. Yeah, we had we had to leave then the Google Lunar X Prize before they ended because we said we can't make the milestones the final date was you had to fly by end 2017. And we said we couldn't do that. And so they said, okay, then you're out of this prize. Nobody has done it in this time frame, but we were open enough to say no. I mean, this Google thing came also with some regulations. I mean, it's Google behind. Yeah. I mean, who can think about anything bad? But it came with for a price, literally.
Sure.
In terms of what you own, or in terms of pictures, and so on. And with leaving this price, or being forced to leave this price, we had all these assets suddenly in our hand, so we could reach out to other partners. We got Vodafone on board to start with them, the first LTE network on the moon. I mean, how cool is that? And then
you decided to do your own thing then without Google. So you decided to go all in and do it yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the question is, how much is 10 million when you want to fly to the moon? 10 million is, I think, for most of us, quite a serious amount of money. But flying to the moon, it's a drop of water on a hot stone. I don't want to say peanuts, that's the cost you pay for your lawyers to get your licenses or so, something like that. So, I mean, it is, you're far away from it. I mean, we talk about hundreds of million to get something into space. When we talk here about the recent developments for the rocket launchers we have here in Germany or across Europe, we see that they need a funding of 100, 150 million to get their first rocket fly. And here we talk about a rocket, what is, I wouldn't say standard technology, but it's technology what is out there. It's not just to assemble it. It's still rocket science, literally.
Yes.
But, there's a complete different level when we talk about the next frontier, going to the moon, doing things nobody has done before. It's like going to the far side of the moon. Yeah.
Sure. So, your job or the job of part-time scientists was to build a rover, a functioning rover that could maneuver on the surface of the moon and do its thing. But who was responsible for transferring that rover from Earth to the moon? Was that your own development, or would you have piggybacked on another carrier?
No, we had to piggyback, as you just mentioned. And the rover was definitely the eye catcher for the entire thing, without any doubt. It has some design of some Audi engineers, and it was this lightweight thing. It looked cool and so on. I mean, was it functioning to go on the moon? Different story, but at least it looked cool. Yeah. And we had a lot of fun with it and got a lot of eyeballs with it. It was the first rover that had not this pure technical appeal. It has some personality. It had three cameras in the camera head, and that had some attitude impression of a face. So it looked like that he smiled. And so that this rover got some personality, but the rover was just the mobility device, the mobility part of this entire project. I mean, this project was around Alina, the autonomous landing and navigation module, the moon lander. So, and that is more or less the third or fourth, in that case, third stage, or could be fourth stage of a rocket that brings you the last mile. I mean, in our case, the last 400,000 miles or kilometers to the moon and land there softly. And I mean, you have seen a few years back, I think 2 years back, our friends from Israel, Space IL, that was one of the competing teams, and they landed their Beresheet lander on the moon. They had a hard landing, what was really also heartbreaking. So they made it to the moon.
The moon, absolutely. So who would you have chartered to take the lander and the modules to the moon?
We spoke with all our carriers that were able to provide at that stage a rocket in that dimension. So from Arianespace to the Russian Proton to the Chinese to SpaceX, where we had some pre-contracts with one of the providers payload.
How does that work in reality? I mean, like, how do you charter a rocket? Do you go on a website and go look for free rockets, or how does that work?
I would say you go to Amazon, but even this joke wouldn't work today anymore because they are developing their own rockets.
Their own thing.
I mean, at that point of time, there were just a handful of providers that were able to give you this right. And for us, the goal was to have an higher altitude, so 70 to 80,000 kilometers are above Earth, and then doing some slingshots around the Earth, and then make a burn, and then fly transfer to the moon in a translunar orbit. So it was is for a rocket provider with a big rocket, not a standard thing, but it's a kind of, because that also pays into the design of the lander or of the stage to carry us over to the moon. So, but as you say, you go to SpaceX or Spaceflight Inc. I mean, there are a handful of rideshare providers or service providers in the market today that offer these kind of services. I mean, today it's not just our Spaceflight, which we selected at that point of time. It's also our ExoLaunch Berlin. Mementos and so on. I mean, it's an entire industry. All these guys that provide you are for your CubeSat a ride to the orbit also can bring you then to the lunar orbit, more or less.
Sure.
So, but you need all this paperwork from your government because it's a launching state and you have the permissions to go there and so on and so forth. But we haven't been, or in my active time, we haven't been in this entire setup. So, and before I left PT Scientists, they were renamed, and there was an agreement with Ariane, that Ariane group that we promoted. So being part of the Ariane 6 development, going then to bring us to the moon as our preferred carrier.
I mean, like, isn't that a fascinating story to be able to get recognition from the Ariane group, to get recognition from Audi, to work with Vodafone? I mean, like, again, this was a young guy's dream. I wouldn't call it fever dream. It was a big dream, and it turned out to become a reality in its first stages. The cool thing about that project initially was that the goals were pretty bold, because very early you guys decided to extend the goals, because it wasn't all about the Google X Prize required maneuvering a couple of, I don't know, meters on the moon, but you guys decided to go look for something very special on the moon, if I remember correct.
That absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there's this setting from the X Prize that brings this idea. And then you think about it and say, okay, when going to the moon, what to do there? Just drive 500 meters, send a selfie, and then that's it. Switch off the engines and leave
better.
It as it is. I mean, we are very close on the sustainability discussion then, or how sustainable it is if there's no science or you apply or so. And I mean, as a full commercial mission, you have to think about all of that and say, yeah, what is it? What I want to achieve there? What I want to sell? Or besides the brand recognition? And I mean, still at that point, we are talking about potentially being the first. And that is also where media value comes in, and where we had the great chance to speak to a few of the largest media organizations worldwide. And negotiate with them. And we announced our media agreement with Red Bull. That only worked out again with this time factor. I mean, if you are lander number 25 that lands on the moon, then it's another taxi is coming. Yeah. I mean, what is it?
It's like back in the Apollo days where the TV viewership decreased rapidly the more people landed on the moon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it got
And then also, I mean, in the US, you also had this then that you have to fight for the next moon mission or with your government to get all this proper funding. But absolutely, that relates to the attention of people to an event, and or it's the same mechanics that applies still today. I mean, when Elon lands on Mars, oh wow, that will be a moment of time. Yeah, or if the first helicopter flies on Mars, that is an, how they call it now, the right moment. Yeah,
right. But you and you guys knew very well how to play the media game, because you decided to do something very special on the moon. You wanted to go back to an actual Apollo landing site. Absolutely. That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, and again. I mean, we lost a bit the track for your last question, but in this process, we decided then, or we evaluated, hey, why don't we do something very special, very unique, and bridging the past with the future? So going back where humanity left Moon to reignite the fire, the flame. I mean, okay, it doesn't burn up there, but at least, or let's stay in this picture. And so we want to revisit Apollo 17. And I mean, Apollo 17 flew 1972 and haven't been visited since then.
Ever since. So,
and it's the one of the longest untouched, conserved
cultural
project or
objects and heritage
object on the moon. I mean, it's discovered from the lunar reconnaissance orbiter, but this reconnaissance orbiter has a resolution of 50 centimeter per pixel. So that means we talk about 8 or 9 pixels that represent this rover. That is not very detailed. Mm. So you don't know, is this antenna still up? Are the seats still there, or is this entire thing fell together? So we want to also then measure the decay of materials on the moon, because it's very important for any upcoming settlement on the moon. And that's what we want to bridge. And that was, I think, the uniqueness of it. Again, it needs a timestamp. It needs a period of time. It is, or let's call it the window of opportunity where you can do that. I mean, now when we have Artemis, when we have all of this, it doesn't matter anymore. They set in new stages.
Sure. And I mean, like, we're almost at the epitome of, and the highest point of that mission that you were part of. Because at some point during those days where you decided to go back to Apollo 17, the phone rang and original members of the actual Apollo crew were ready to talk with you guys. And that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it is definitely fascinating. Did they ring us? I don't know. I just know that if you have somebody who walked on the moon, it's absolute special, because there were only, I think, 15, 16 people, something like that. That walked on the moon. And if you have somebody who is still alive, that is a benefit.
That's a privilege. Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. And so it was great. I mean, it's still, when you have an astronaut talking to you, it gives many of us goosebumps. Yes. And that's fantastic.
Yes. Fantastic. But then at some point, things started to change. And I think, that mission that you've described so far is already a fascinating success in itself. But of course, going into space, then going to the moon is a pretty tricky thing to do. And at some point, things just didn't move on the way you expected those things to move on. So what happened?
At one point of time, I decided to move on. And the company was in financial struggles, and I think I couldn't add too much more value, and I continued that where I came from, my open source, my business intelligence work, my publishing work at spacewatch.global.
Having financial issues on such an endeavor, I mean, like, This is not an unusual thing to maneuver oneself into. So again, the mission hasn't happened so far. You decided to move on. We're wishing the rest of the crew all the best. But now I think, Torsten, we should also move on to your next big project. And then that next big project is, of course, Spacewatch Global. And you're the CEO of a fascinating network of space intelligence and space news. So let's talk a little bit about this. So what made you move into that world?
Oh, there's another story that kicks in. I worked for, I think, a decade in and with companies in the Middle East. I had the opportunity to be part of a team that trained the Oman government and military on our satellite communication, and been involved with a number of the projects that are started very early in the UAE. So I was visiting many of these conferences and events in the Middle East on a regular basis, and with my co-founder, we had, after an event in Abu Dhabi, the chance to give a lecture in Muscat in Oman, or at the Sultan Qaboos University, and we decided, hey, let's make a road trip, not just jump on a flight. Let's make a road trip. So, and then you hire your car, rent a car, and then you make a road trip through the desert, through the mountains. That was 9 years ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of time to talk with each other and to jump from one idea to the next one. And so we said, hey, why don't we write what we would like to read about the region? And that was the simple idea that drove us forward. It took another 2 years. We decided the occasion or the event, actually, of the announcement of the UAE Space Agency to say, okay, now we put our project into life. Why that? With that, we said, now we are very sure that this entire region gets a push towards space. And when we see what the UAE achieved since 5 years, the founding of the UAE Space Agency was pretty much timed with the announcement of their Mars mission Hope, what we see flying around the Mars right now. And yeah, we said, now the time is right. And we got it into life.
Fascinating. So it all started with a trip into the desert, into the unknown, so to say, and a good idea, and a lot of time to kill, that is.
Yeah. I mean, it's not time to kill. It's really when you are being creative, then time flies. And
sure,
just about the unknown, also the Oman had road signs. And sure, so that was not an off-road endeavor, getting your GPS or even your compass, getting you from A to B. No, it was just a road trip, as we would do it here in Europe as well.
A controlled adventure. All right. So what is the vision behind Spacewatch Global?
Spacewatch Global want to be is a go-to place for independent information about space and new space activities. And that's what we are aiming for. So at the moment, on our website, we produce 3 to 5 news a day, plus 1 or 2 features a day. These features not necessarily have to be produced by us. These are features, and that is a second goal that we have. We want to be the largest global community for independent exchange of ideas about space. So we give everyone the opportunity to contribute to the platform with content. It will be peer-reviewed content. So our editor-in-chief and his team will review, not on the technical sense, but topical-wise and also journalistic-wise, if that meets our standards. But you can find articles from really 15-year-old or Australian guys that want to go to space to the who is who of the global leadership in the space segment.
Who's a name you're most proud of?
Oh, I would say Scott Pace is definitely one of them. Scott Pace was one of the advisors that we had on board when we started SpaceWatch. And a few years later, he became, under the Trump administration, the chairman of the National Space Council in the U.S., mm-hmm. really driving things like Artemis mission and other big projects forward. And that is something I would say I'm super proud and mm-hmm. and grateful to have this opportunity to have such great names on board. But the list is really
endless,
very long, of people that we like to work with. And a few of these names you see today are in our space cafes, or a series of online events that we started globally.
And you're connected to all those space agencies and institutions. So you're good friends with ESA and NASA and SpaceX and whatnot.
I wouldn't go so far to say that we are good friends with them, but we have
keep your healthy distance.
Yeah, we have a good Rolodex. Let's put it that way.
Nice. Speaking of the U.S. administration, there's another pretty important person that showed up on SpaceWatch Global a couple of months ago. That is Pamela Malloy. And she didn't know it back when she was on your platform that she was going to become the deputy head of NASA now. So that's pretty cool to see who you were sort of helping build their career. I can say that.
That's nicely said. I mean, she was on your show. She was a guest of your podcast, and you had the privilege to talk with her. And
yes,
that was I just have done the nitty gritty setting our update, and I was really working, I think, for 3-4 months to get her on board on the show. And when you remember on that day when we talked with her and had this privilege to do the recording, she was nominated, and it was still in the rumors, in the advanced rumors, that she will be nominated for the Biden transition team, or the NASA transition yes. team of Biden. And
let's make a quick break here, dear listeners. I would like to take you behind the scenes and go back to the very episode we did with Pam. Here's the end of the show. I wanted to ask another question, but Pam declined for good reason, as we know now. Well, do we have five more minutes?
No, I really don't. I've got a 2 o'clock phone calls in like okay. 1 minute. Great.
Thank you so much.
My apologies. I am on a very tight schedule today. So
unbeknownst to us, this was the call that brought her to the Biden transition team. I'm a little proud to have been so close to being in the same room, well, almost, when this happened.
I mean, that was great, and she still talked with us, and that was, I think, in its own a privilege. And now having her as the deputy or administrator of NASA is cool, no doubt. But I would mention another name here, and that is Bhavya Lal. I had the chance to talk with Bhavya in one of my 33-minute formats, and I know Bhavya for quite some time from the disarmament discussions at UNIDIR and all these conferences. And she became earlier this year head of staff at NASA. And that was, I would say, absolute awesome. I mean, she is not an career military. She is not an astronaut as Pamela mm-hmm. is, with all the merits she has. She is a researcher and doing really great stuff, and got this chance. And I mean, she fulfills also the diversity equation that we see more and more mm-hmm. in the US, what is absolute great to mm-hmm. eyewitness.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I mean, like, we're experiencing a huge renaissance in the space industry, in space travel. So I think space travel is not going to go away anytime soon. Quite the opposite, I guess. So we're going to be seeing quite some things in the future, I could imagine. Humans on the moon again, perhaps sometime humans on Mars. So what's the role of Spacewatch Global in all of this?
We observe and report what's going on in the most objective, most independent way possible. I mean, we are completely owned by our private shareholders that have no political, no media political agenda. So we are not part of a huge publishing house or another big media organization. And so that's what we try to achieve, really, to educate and to inform. And we don't know where our mission will end, but at the moment, I hear your optimism of that we will not see it going away. I mean, there are tendencies that we might, as human race, are messing up with the near-Earth orbit sooner than we all expect. What will make missions to Moon, to Mars, and sustainable usage of the near-Earth orbit absolute impossible.
You're talking about space debris.
It's space debris in all their facets. Debris is just the effect of two colliding objects or uncontrolled objects. The entire discussion about space traffic management comes into play. And I recognize that with huge interest, that especially in the last weeks, we have to big events are going on that showed me that there is hope, but we have to speed up and take actions. 2 years back, there were the LTS, the Long-Term Sustainability Guidelines of the UN, adopted with consensus after a 10-year process of negotiating them. These Long-Term Sustainability Guidelines are guidelines how to behave, how to clean up your space. And they were absolutely needed. The point is, an adaptation doesn't mean they're implemented. And that is a big gap. So how does a nation adapt these LTS? And we see in the ongoing session of the UN COPIUS, what is the UN Committee of the Peaceful Use of Outer Space, they have their 58th session these days, and listening to a number of the nations giving their statements, I experienced the first time in a few years how much they address space sustainability, space situation awareness, space traffic management, and the urgent need for actions. Mm-hmm. And that gives me some hope. Mm-hmm. We think about space as this infinite, vast area where you can do whatever you want to do. The problem is that we have a few areas which are absolutely crowded, which need this traffic management. I mean, there are several orbits above the Earth where satellites or satellite constellations are cruising. And also, when we have satellites in a lower orbit than the geostationary orbit, then they usually fly over the poles. So, and that means over the poles, or there is nobody with a traffic light.
I think this is pretty much comparable to the early days of motorized vehicles on Earth. So that was like 100, 120 years ago. As far as I'm informed, there was no traffic management altogether. And that turned out to be pretty harmful to some. As a result out of this, people decided to implement strategies and regulations. I think this is pretty much what we're experiencing at the moment.
Absolutely.
In space.
And just as a side fact, do you know where the first traffic light is?
No.
In Europe?
No.
Potsdamer Platz in Berlin Center. So it's still there.
Interesting.
There's a replica built. And so that was the first traffic light. And that point of time, or as you said, or 100 years plus ago, people came to see it, functioning. So it's fascinating. Yeah, from the pure imagination. But I think one of the big differences is that all that car accidents or vehicle accidents that we had that led to implementing rules of behavior, mm-hmm. rules of the road, the traffic guidelines happened on Earth and didn't have a huge impact beside potentially a loss of life. When it happened in space, it remains there in space.
Right. Right.
Because you crash something in space, it doesn't mean it falls down. I mean, if a car is crashed with high speed, then it slows down on its own because it's crashed. So, and that is something that you don't have in space. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. We talk here about a velocity of 27,000 kilometers per hour. That means even small objects have such a high kinetic energy that they are absolute dangerous and for any other object. And then you have things, this uncontrolled impacting of other objects or called the Kessler effect that we have dramatically seen in the Gravity movie.
Right. And you know what's funny is, speaking of that movie, usually we're so used to that imagery that space debris is so lightly tumbling around in space. But in fact, this is pretty misleading, because this tumbling is in fact an object at a speed of 10 times the speed of a bullet. Absolutely. So we have absolutely no understanding what's going on up there.
Yeah. And we are talking about the bullet when the bullet left the gun, and yes. not when it's flying already, because it's slowed down by the Earth's forces.
Yeah. I would like to draw our attention to Spacewatch Global and its role in the international community of space news and space news outlets, because I think that Spacewatch Global does play a significant part, especially when it comes to the independentness. And that means, if I understand Spacewatch Global correct, it's not all about Elon. It's not all about NASA. There's other places also who do pretty fascinating space stuff. And I think this is interesting, because this would be a place where people could go if they wanted to learn more what's going on in space, right?
Absolutely. So I'd like to say we are covering a CubeSat development in Bhutan or in any of the African countries, then just another launch or of another batch or of the Starlink constellation, what many are doing. And I think I'm a bit ambivalent about the recognition.
Torsten, what's the most unusual and unexpected space story you've come across on Spacewatch Global?
You know, we do this fact checking as best as we can. But here, there are some of these stories where you say, wow, is that really possible? Or is it just another one of those? And what I think what is fascinating is this one project which just got their certificate from NASA. And it's human spaceflight, of course. I mean, our human spaceflight is that what motivates many of us. And that's Space Hero. I mean, they want to set up this show, global show, for our finding the perfect candidate to train them for a flight to the ISS. And I think space becomes approachable. And these kind of stories, they are fascinating. And I would like to see them more and more from other countries, from other continents, from including other people. I mean, ESA is now selecting their new cadre for astronauts. Mm-hmm. And they've also explicitly opened it and encouraged women to apply, but mm-hmm. not limited to that. It's also that they are inviting disabled people for applying to being an astronaut. And I think that goes into the right way to include mm-hmm. everyone in this, mm-hmm. this mission. And I mean, we have seen that many of the businesses, including space, is an old white man are dominated environment. And that has to change. And it does change as we speak.
Mm, absolutely. One last question, if I may. If someone wants to team up with Spacewatch Global, is that still possible? Are you looking for expertise? Are you looking for talent?
We see that as in our global development and are happy for each and everyone who wants to join and comes with the right attitude or with the open mind set or comes mm-hmm. in peace to us and wants to work with us. We have a number of volunteers providing their labor to gain expertise, to get outreach. We are absolutely open for anyone to knock on our doors and work with us in good faith.
Nice. Thank you. Torsten, at the end of our show, you know what's next, right? And that is the Space Cafe Espresso, the shot of inspiration. So what is your shot of inspiration you would like to share with the audience?
I experienced in the last months a number of talks where people said, hey, how do you become a space communicator? How do you become somebody who gets along with all these big names that we mentioned before and runs this show and so on? And for me, what are the key principles for doing what we do? And it's one thing is as easy as or as simple as it comes with is be yourself. Don't try to pretend to be somebody else to know also your limits. And all of these basic behaviors, what we consider as good behaviors are coming here into play. And sure, many of them are not very compatible to the hardcore capitalistic or system we are living in. But these are the principles I like to see spacewatch.global moving on into the future, because value-based activities is something that counts for me more than a pure revenue or pure profit-driven activities.
Thank you so much, Torsten, for being on the show. It was really, really inspiring.
Thank you. And thank you, Markus, for being such a wonderful part of that.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. And if you're interested in finding out more about Spacewatch Global, please head over to the mothership, which also happens to be called Spacewatch Global. I'm looking forward to next time. And what I can already say, we do have an extraordinary personality to offer who, if the rumors become true, could make history in a way that is reserved for very few individuals only. I can say it's about a new theory about the origin of life. Until then, all the best and stay with us.